I'm Master at Life and Weight Loss Coach, Jillian Lama, and you're listening to the Body You Crave podcast, where you'll learn how to end emotional eating, lose excess weight, and feel amazing in your body. No cheating required. Keep listening, and I'll show you how. All right, here we go. Hey, welcome back. Okay, so today we are diving into, and actually probably over the next three episodes, I think this is turning into a trilogy, we are going to dive into grief and other heavy emotions. So this could be, I think grief is one of the big ones. For some people, it might be more like depression, extreme or intense loneliness, abandonment. There might be some other really big heavy emotions. And I'm going to talk about grief in particular because, one, I don't think society as a whole fully understands. And I think like the stages of grief just doesn't do it justice. And I have gone through a lot of grief over the last 2 years, maybe like year and even just a year and a half. There's been a lot of grief. And my clients, I've also noticed they've had some big losses, whether it's a divorce, a breakup, losing a loved one. There's been a lot of grief that's come up recently. And so I first was inspired and I started taking notes at the end of August. And it's been about 2 months now. It's taken me 2 months, in part because I knew that this was a big project and it felt big and overwhelming. When I was leaving myself voice notes, I left myself an hour's worth of voice notes in that first week when I was really grieving the loss of a relationship. And so I knew it was going to be a big project. It hit close to home. It was still very emotional. And while I would have liked to have recorded an episode like that week around grief, I would not have been able to make it through without crying. And I also wanted to make sure that I put all of my thoughts together in a way where it was still coherent and it made sense. And because there are so many different perspectives and aspects and things that I want to talk about, there was also a bit of wanting to organize my thoughts. And when I was leaving myself these voice notes, a lot of it was just stream of consciousness. And while that is still really beneficial, it can be a little all over the place, which some of my episodes, I feel like I do a pretty good job of, we're going to go down this tangent and then I'm going to bring you back. And then we're going to go down this side and then I'm going to bring you back. I'm always bringing you back to the center, even though it's like the spokes of a wheel. We're going off on some of these different spokes, but I'm always bringing you back to the center. And now that I've relaunched the podcast again this summer and am back at it again, I feel like this is kind of 2.0. And so the first release of the podcast, the first 88-ish episodes, were very much geared around like weight loss, emotional eating, our relationship with food, the scale, things like that. And there will still be a lot of content around that. However, moving forward, I'm also going to be talking and sharing more about life things that impact our eating, because we don't eat in a vacuum. We don't drink in a vacuum. We eat and drink as a way to self-soothe, as a way to buffer, as a way to avoid some of these negative emotions. And part of this is going to be me sharing my journey and my epiphanies and the work that I've done internally, the work that God is doing in me and still doing in me and through me. And so part of it is going to be sharing more of that and what that looks like outside of weight loss, in emotional eating, binging. Part of that is going to be going a little bit deeper into the binging and sharing a little more behind the scenes of what did it really look like for me? Because on the outside, I looked really good. I looked fine, but no one really knew that internal struggle. And I went to great lengths to make sure that no one saw that internal struggle, that they saw this version of myself that I wanted them to see. And so part of it is peeling back the curtain and being seen and being known. And there's a thought that one of my mentors gave me years ago, and she said, I have nothing to prove and nothing to hide. And that's the same approach and philosophy that I want to take here. And so grief has been a part of my life heavily in the last 2 months in particular, but really when I go back the last 2 years, there's been a lot of grief as well. So we're going to dive into that. And so it's going to be three parts. This first one, I'm going to talk about grief as like this, from an overarching level of what is it? How do we talk about it? How do we want to think about it? And I want to offer some different ways to think about it, like some new perspectives on it. Because not only will this be helpful if you are grieving and going through a loss, but it's also going to be helpful, I think, in understanding and helping others as they're on their journey. And sometimes it's just having that compassion and empathy. And I remember my former father-in-law passing away, and my ex, his mom was still grieving after about 6 months, and his perspective was, shouldn't you be over it by now? And I think sometimes when we don't have that kind of experience, we don't have that kind of loss. And sometimes in the religious communities too, it's if they're in a better place, they're in heaven, like, why are you so sad? Why are you still grieving? And there can be shame around it. And so part of this is also to help empower you as maybe a friend or a spouse or a colleague or a friend, like family member of somebody who's grieving and going through this, to help give some context and background. There will be good days and bad days, good weeks and bad weeks. And nothing has gone wrong. Nobody's going backwards. This is all a journey, and everybody's journey is going to look different when it comes to grief and loss. Just like everybody's journey to finding a spouse, everybody's journey through divorce, everybody's journey through weight loss or ending emotional eating, like, it's all going to look a little bit different. So we first want to start by not comparing ourselves to others and not keep thinking like, they're showing up this way, so I should be too. And so often, again, we don't see what's going on behind closed doors. We don't see what's going on under the surface when it's late at night and those early morning hours. Like, we don't know what's going on. We don't see it. All we see is what somebody says, what they tell us, what they show us. Sometimes it's what they show us on social media. And we all know that is a very curated lifestyle, right? Like, it's a very curated, I want you to see this specific version of me. And there's nothing wrong with that. Of course, we all want to put our best foot forward. We all want to share our wins. And it can be hard and embarrassing to share the losses and to share the struggle. And yeah, so anyways, let's dive in. I'm sure you've heard of the 5 stages of grief, right? So denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and then acceptance. But grief is not linear. We're not going through one phase one at a time. And we're also not like going through anger and then never feeling angry again. We're not going through denial and then never being in denial again. And so while it can be helpful to understand these emotions as it comes up, I think it's really important that we recognize that grief is more than just one emotion. Grief is not just one single thing. It encompasses, I would say, a dozen emotions, often simultaneously. So not only is there anger, denial, bargaining, that's often happening all at the same time or very, very much in conjunction with one another. But then we have agony, anguish, sorrow, defeat, loneliness, apathy. And maybe there's apathy in other areas. I was just talking with a client this week, a new client who he's lost a loved one. And one of the things that I told him, like from the, you know, just straight up on our first call, I was like, normally this is how I handle first calls and this is what we're doing. But it's, and typically we're setting goals. We're looking at the 1-year vision, the 6-month vision of what do you want to create? Let's really set some goals. And when we are going through some bigger amounts of grief, it's a little bit harder to be able to focus on that long-term vision because sometimes that apathy has set in and we don't know what we want. Maybe we don't really care. And we can't focus on something positive and something that we want to be achieving all the time when we are in that high level of grief and that sadness and sorrow. And sometimes it's overwhelm. And I think one emotion that doesn't often get talked about with grief, at least not that I'm aware of, is fear. Fear is a really powerful emotion that is really, it's your brain trying to keep you safe. It's your brain trying to avoid being caught off guard, to avoid being disappointed, to avoid the negative emotions. That are, fear is a very motivating, very powerful factor. And you just look at, like, we know and we talk often about FOMO and like the fear of missing out. There can be fear in all different ways. And I think sometimes it's fear of I'll never ... Like, life will never be the same again. I'll never love someone as much as I love this person. Or I'll never be loved as much as this person loved me. It's the fear of, will I ever be happy again? Will life ever feel the same? Will I ever feel complete? Will I always feel this aching hole in my heart? And right now I'm talking about grief as like the loss of a loved one, But grief isn't just about relationships. So let me back up here for a second. Let's look at what grief is and isn't. So grief is not just the loss of life. It can be the change in any dynamic. So with relationships, there's a lot of grief with divorce, not because the spouse has died, but because there's the loss of the hope of the future you thought you were going to have. There's the loss of the vision, the loss of the future life you wanted, the loss of hope that this person maybe could change or this person was going to love you the way that you wanted to be loved. There's the loss of hope of where you thought you would be at this point in life. So it could be any change in relationship dynamic. So it can come with divorce. It can come with a breakup. Like you're used to messaging someone every day and now all of a sudden it stops. You're used to calling someone or having somebody to come home to and to tell you about your day, and that's no longer the case anymore. That's changed. So sometimes it's the change in the daily habits and in those dynamics, in what we're used to. And I think especially when it's relationships, it taps on this core fear and often wound of abandonment. So it's often, I'm not good enough, somehow I'm not enough, or I'm too much. So it's, if I was enough, this person would have stuck around, this person would have stayed, this person would have chose me. Or it could be flipped and it could be, if I'm too much, it's now, if I wasn't too much, if I was just a little calmer, a little less extra, if I was a little more normal, then they wouldn't have left. And it really stems from this abandonment and wanting to feel accepted, wanting to feel loved, wanting to feel a part of the community, wanting to be wanted. And these are some really core primal desires that our brain has. And so this is something that it's like, logically, we can know that this person is not the right fit. Logically, we can know that this dating relationship isn't going to keep moving forward, or that this person is not meant to be your spouse anymore. Like, we can know it logically, but it still taps on that abandonment, those wounds of really wanting to be enough, wanting to be accepted, wanting to be loved, feeling like something is wrong with you, and that's why they left. And it's not always conscious, but that's often the subconscious. And this can come up with a lot of things. Like, it could come up with, especially with something like suicide. And if somebody takes their own life, a lot of times it's, well, I could have stopped it. I could have saved them. So not only is there grief, but then there's this extra layer of responsibility. And often it's over responsibility. So it's, if I was there, I could have saved them. It's not just with suicide. It could be like there was a car accident. And your thought might be, well, if I was driving, if I was there with them, I could have saved us. We wouldn't have gotten into that accident. They would still be alive. And so we want to look at just, again, all of the emotions, because with grief can also come guilt, can come shame, can come this feeling of, I let somebody down. I wasn't there for them. And it's so compounding and intertwined. Like, it's such a complex thing. And so while I use the word grief and I talk about it, it's this like chemical compound of literally at least a dozen other emotions. And for everybody, that compound's going to be a little bit different. And the grief in my divorce looked a little bit different than the grief in breakup number one, which looked a little bit different in breakup number two. So it's going to look a little bit different as you go through. But when we also recognize, like, there are going to be a lot of emotions and nothing has gone wrong. This isn't a problem. And I don't need to try to hide it or fight it. And this is where like the emotional eating comes into play, or the emotional drinking, or anytime we are buffering, we're trying to avoid those negative emotions, especially big, heavy ones that don't feel safe. And so now it's, I turn to food, I turn to alcohol, I turn to social media, I turn to sex, I turn to a dating app, I turn to any number of things to try to get my emotional needs met in that moment and to avoid those negative emotions. So sometimes that is meeting my emotional needs, is just getting out of the negativity of what's there and what is. And those are often like deeply ingrained, deeply learned patterns that we are now going to rewire. And we want to just have a lot of compassion for ourselves. It doesn't take as long to rewire these as it took to build them, because you have built and strengthened these habits and these wires, these neural pathways, over the course of decades. But it's not going to take you that long to change them, I promise. But it will take some time. It's like just having the awareness that this is the pattern doesn't mean that things automatically instantly change. Like just knowing I have an anxious attachment style and it's a little like combo anxious avoidant, but I tend to skew more anxious. Like just knowing that doesn't mean it prevents me now from being anxious in a relationship. Like it's still there. I still have to work and heal those parts of me and heal and change how I'm showing up and what my thoughts are. But grief is not just around relationships. It can come up in other areas. So money. There can be a lot of grief around money. The loss of money, the loss of savings, the loss of investments, the loss of retirement accounts. And it taps on this core fear or a core wound around safety and being able to provide for yourself, to provide for your family. Like money, there's a strong tie. I'm actually going to talk about money and weight loss in an upcoming episode because there are some really strong ties around when we are buffering, and sometimes it's emotional spending, and we may not always see it at the time, but we're spending to avoid or get out of an emotion, or we are spending to create an emotion, like spending extra money at Christmas or Hanukkah because you want to give your kids a good Christmas. You don't want things to seem like they changed. You want to do it all, but you're putting it on a credit card. You're going into debt. You're spending more than what you bring in, trying to create this positive experience for your kids because you're wanting to keep things as familiar and safe and consistent as they've been in the past. And that's not to blame or shame or say that's wrong or bad in any way. It's just really bringing to light and bringing awareness around why is it that we're doing this, right? So money can be a big one. There can be loss of a savings account. Markets are going to dip. You might have, how many people have lost money in like Ponzi schemes over the last several decades? Just millions, hundreds of millions of dollars have been conned out of people. And so there can be grief there. And so if we want to understand the patterns, understand the habit, and give yourself the time to process and feel all of the emotions, some of which is like shame and self-loathing. And I should have known better. I should have caught on to this sooner. I shouldn't have let that happen. I should have pulled my money out sooner, or whatever it is that we're telling ourselves. We're just arguing with reality, which trust me, I've been there too. Like sometimes I will argue with reality as well. Okay. I say this with so much love and so much compassion. Sometimes it's with a career and there can be grief or loss that you didn't get the job or the promotion or the opportunity. And that might tap on a fear or wound of you're not good enough. Maybe you didn't make the team, the cut. Maybe, and this could go back to when you were a kid, of what did you make it mean if you got picked last for sports, if you didn't make first chair for the orchestra, or maybe you didn't make the soccer team or the cheer squad or whatever it was. And just not making the team doesn't have to be a problem. There's not always grief. I remember when I didn't make the soccer team, I played travel soccer for several years. And then when I think I was going into seventh grade, so I was starting cheerleading and gymnastics and had planned to run track, and I didn't make the soccer team that year, the travel team. And I was a little relieved. I was relieved, actually. Like, I hated running. I was a little burnt out. It was a lot. And I had these new other fun sports that I was really looking forward to. And I never really felt that girly growing up. And so even at 13 years old, being able to now feel more girly and do more girly sports, I kind of liked that. Like, I wanted that. So I was okay with it. I tried out for a dance team this year, actually, in my city. They have different like dance crews that dance in parades. And so there was one that I was trying out for. And I'm a good dancer. I'm like, I'm fit, I'm athletic, I'm pretty, I can learn choreography, I'm a nice person, I'm funny, I'm friendly, like, I'm delightful. What's not to love? And I didn't make the team. And at first, I wanted to email the organizer and be like, I think there's been a mistake. I should be on this team. And for whatever reason, I didn't make the team. And I'll be totally honest, I didn't like that they weren't transparent with what you needed to do to get on the team. You like earned points somehow, so they wouldn't tell you how you earned points. And then when you didn't make the team, they also wouldn't tell you where you need to improve. So I was like, okay. So some people who made it were dancers and some were not. And so I was just kind of like, all right, well, okay. And it just, it was one of those things that where like, I was angry. I was like, what the hell? Like, I went through stages of grief with not making this dance team. And then I also decided, and then at some point, I make peace and acceptance, but I was talking about this for like 3 weeks. I was like, let me tell you the drama that is happening in my life as a middle-aged woman. I swear. And I think with these dance crews, to me, they remind me a little bit of sororities, which I was in a sorority. I love my sorority. Like, I don't see anything negative with that, but I'm like, I wonder if I just made that comment and said it to the wrong person and they took it negatively and they thought I was like being demeaning or making fun of that. I have no idea. So anyways, I decided I'm going to take this dance class and I'm going to get back into dance on my own. And then I might start my own dance team. We'll see. I don't know. Like, I'm just open to what is in store for me in the future. But I was like, okay, if I want to dance, I can solve this by learning. Like, I'm just going to go take a dance class in town. And then I signed up for this like dance tutorial membership that I really haven't looked at all. But I go to dance class every week on Wednesdays, right? There's a way that we can use it, but I had to allow myself to be angry and I had to allow myself to be confused and pissed off. And what the hell? What's wrong with me? And then it was like, what's wrong with you that you don't want me? It's like all the things. So there can be grief even in what feels like first world problems, things that aren't that big of a deal. And we need to recognize and give ourselves so much love and compassion, even with those. Okay, so that's grief. Grief can be it can be for a variety of things. And it's normally there's a variety of emotions at any one time, and we'll be shifting and going through different emotions. And we don't want to make it a problem. Okay, so let's get back to here. Multiple emotions, fear. I was talking about fear. That's where I was on when I went back to circle up to point number one, because I just dove into point number two. The thing with fear and with grief is fear gives you the opportunity to be courageous and to have courage. And I think this is one of the things that we really value. I think as a society, we value courage. We value people who are courageous. You may even consider yourself to have that as a skill or a quality. You may want that as a quality in yourself. And in order to have courage, we also have to be in a place where there's first fear. Right? And it doesn't always feel good in the moment. It's probably not going to feel good in the moment. It's not going to always feel good to be courageous because you are standing toe to toe with that fear. And I think if we go back to relationships and we look at love, it takes a lot of courage to love because we're risking a lot. We are risking disappointment, feeling abandoned. We are risking judgment. We are risking getting attached to someone to have them leave. And there, it takes a lot of courage to love again, to put yourself out there, to try again, to do something new. And this is it, like with everything that I say, all of it is we really just want to have more self-awareness and start to see what are the patterns running on default. And do I like those? Do I like the results that I'm creating? And where do things need to change? But grief also encompasses a loss of hope. So when I was explaining and defining it, grief is the loss of hope of the future you thought you were going to have with someone. It's the loss of the dynamic you had with someone. So even when there was so much agony and anguish in the moment, I also still hung on to knowing that there was hope for the future. There was hope of a future with someone else. Because the grief is like so overwhelming and so encompassing. And especially if it's a long-term relationship, if it's a marriage, if it's something that's ending where it's you've spent a lot amount of time with this person. You might have kids with them or pets with them, or it's you've gotten used to life with them. And you had hope for the future. You had hope of what life was going to look like. You had hope that things could be reconciled, that you would come back together. I remember watching a YouTube video of Dr. Ramani years ago, And this is when I was really waking up to what was happening in my marriage. And it was titled Hope Dies Last. And I didn't, at the time, I was like, wow, that's insightful. That's profound. And I didn't fully recognize the weight of that statement. Hope dies last. There is so much hope that we have, that we can save something, that we can save a relationship, we can save a marriage, we can fix it. There's so much hope that maybe we'll say something in the right way and our spouse will finally get it and understand and change. There's hope that they're going to see what's been going on, that they will, that they will change, that they will start to show up the way that you want them to, maybe the way that they showed up in the beginning. And when we fully allow and embrace the grief, we also let go of the hope we had for change, the hope of that future together. And that is a hard thing to let go of, because that's often what we've held on to for so long. The hope that we could go back to the way things were in the beginning. There's so much hope. And it takes a lot of emotional grit and resilience to let go of the hope and to recognize that it's there and it's not coming. And it's hard. That is a hard place to be. And it takes that, your own insourcing and creating emotional safety as you do this. Because often we find emotional safety in other people. We find emotional safety in this dynamic of maybe being in a relationship or having a spouse. And we now have to let go of that and find our own emotional safety inside us when we're alone, when we're single, when we're on our own. And even when you know it's the right thing to do, even when you know it's necessary, it never feels good to end a relationship. It's still hard. It still hurts. This kind of emotional pain and sadness and heartache is good, though. It's not a bad thing, because you are not a robot. You have emotions. This is part of the human experience. This is what it's there for. I remember talking with my coach as I was going through the divorce last year and just sharing some of these things. And even after the divorce, it had been a couple of months, and my ex was showing me, we were at my son's birthday party, and he was showing me a video of him playing in this ball, like this big foam pit where he was like swinging out and dropping into the foam pit. And there was he got a text message from a woman, and I can't remember exactly what it said, but it was something like, too bad you can't fly out here, or something to that effect. And there was this stabbing in my stomach of, oh, I initiated the divorce. I knew we needed to separate. I knew we could not stay married. I knew that was not going to make either of us healthy or happy. It wasn't going to do anybody any good. I knew it needed to end. And I knew he was dating other people. I knew it was inevitable. But still, seeing that message was like that little stab. And I remember telling her about it, and I was like, it's not that I want him back. I don't regret my decision, but it was like a gut punch. And she was like, yes. Yeah, because you are normal, because you are human, you have these emotions. And she was like, I would be concerned if you didn't feel that way. I would be concerned if you didn't have these emotions, because now you might be the sociopath. These emotions are not a bad thing. Even when we know that it's essential, even when we know that this is the way it has to be, it's still going to hurt, and we can still feel rejected. And this is something I'll talk about in the next episode, walking you through some of my experiences recently with grief. But one of the things with my ex was, I initiated it. I was the one who said, I don't want to be married anymore. We can't keep doing this. And yet I also still felt very rejected, and I felt abandoned. And I really had to work on my relationship with myself and really change how I saw myself and change that self-concept of who I am and how I'm going to show up. Okay, because it's a lot of emotions. It's big, it's heavy, they're intense. And we're often looking for a way out. And so this is, again, where we're just mindful that we're not turning to something or someone else as a means of escape. And this isn't just the dating app. It might be like calling an ex, calling an old flame, calling somebody that, you know, that likes you more than you like them, just because you don't want to feel lonely. This is where we really bring in the awareness of the patterns, the awareness of what's happening. And I believe that we grieve big because we love big. There was so much grief over a relationship ending, a dating relationship ending for me this summer. So much loss and sadness and heartache. And one of the things, though, that I held on to even on that first day, as I was leaving myself like half sobbing voice notes, I still held on to this hurts so bad and it feels so big and heavy because there was so much love. There was so much connection. Part of why the loss hurts is because we have such deep fondness, such deep memories, such deep love for this person, for the relationship, for what you had with them, for what you wanted to create with them. And it hurts because many of us also have future plans with this person, even if it's only in our heads. And we have to accept that that's not going to happen anymore. It's the hope of what we thought was going to come and making peace and acceptance that we're not going to get those experiences. We're not going to have that life. And that is courageous, to put your heart out there, to let yourself truly love someone else, risk the pain, the hurt, the sorrow of it potentially not working out, and yet doing it anyways, because we know that there is so much joy that comes in these types of relationships. If you want it, of course. Like, I am the type of person where I've been divorced twice now, but I still want to be married. I still want to have a spouse. I see, and there's nothing wrong if that's what you want or if that's not what you want. If you are divorced or getting divorced and you don't want to have a spouse in the future, or if you want maybe a relationship but you don't want to be married, there's nothing wrong either way. But often it hurts big and it feels so hard and it's so painful because there was so much invested with this other person. And sometimes we want to be aware of when maybe it wasn't a healthy or functional dynamic, when maybe you found your worth, value, and how you were good enough now in some way because you were with this person. Sometimes it's letting go of those dynamics. We have to first recognize them and see how we're trying to earn or achieve love, how we're trying to prove something about us. And then also how, with some of these kind of toxic dynamics, how it really taps on that, those real internal core desires, those core cravings, to be loved, to be accepted, wanted, to feel like we're enough, to feel like we're just right, we're not too much. And so when that gets wrapped up in another person, and now that other person is not there to validate it, to give you, to meet those emotional needs, now it can feel really hard, really heavy, really big. And so again, this is where we want to start to insource it. We have to figure out what it was that we got from them. And then we start to look at, how can I give this to myself? And we know the sunlight because we know the darkness. Just like with loss, we know love because we know grief. And we know grief because we knew such deep, profound love. My dad has one of the best sayings, and he says, if everybody was as smart as you, then you would just be average. And I don't know why I put that in here, but it plays along that you have to know, like sometimes we'll be out and about and there'll be somebody where you're like, this person is so dumb. Like, this person has no common sense. This person doesn't get it at all. And it's sometimes we have to know the opposite. And so that's why he's like, if everyone was as smart as you, you would just be average. So it's okay, I'm smart, which also means I also have to deal with some people who are not so smart. We can know things because of the opposite. And part of the big, heavy grief is because there was such big, deep, amazing love, intentional, open, accepting. And sometimes it hurts because we wanted that type of love and then we didn't get it. And we're making it something about us. Somehow I am not good enough because they couldn't love me the way that I wanted them to or the way that I thought they should. And that's never the case. Grief is not linear. So the way that I like to think about grief, and there's a lot of analogies that I'll probably use in the next few episodes, but I think about it as like waves of the ocean. And so in the beginning, grief feels really big. It's like we're standing out in the ocean and we're maybe up to our waist in the water, but these waves come and they just plow over us. They come up to our shoulders, up to our neck, and they're big, they're heavy, they're strong, they are repetitive. There's not a lot of time in between. It's a lot. And sometimes it feels we're hanging on. We can breathe, but just barely. And this is when we have to allow the emotions. We don't want to keep fighting them because these waves are going to come in at various intervals, at various heights, at various levels. And if you ever think about yourself like in the ocean, there is no way you could possibly push back an ocean wave with your hands, with your body. If anything, the wave is pushing us. It's so strong. It's so powerful. And so in the beginning, the grief, and with all the emotions, right? Because it's not just one, the dozens of emotions that come with it are going to feel big and heavy. They might come really frequently. And then as time goes on, they start to get a little bit slower, less frequent, less overwhelming, less powerful, and it gets a little bit easier. And so then it's like the waves come in, and now the waves are just coming up to like your chest, not all the way up to your shoulders, but just like the top of your chest. And then they start to come up to like your rib cage, and then it's your belly button, and then they start to come up to your hips and your waist. And it's like the more you process and you allow the grief, you allow the emotions, you don't fight them, you don't resist them, you don't turn to other means of coping, you just sit with it, you're there, you feel it in your body, because emotions are just vibrations in your body. That's all they are. So the more that you can allow it, the more that the waves die down. It's when we are fighting and we're resisting and we're avoiding that it feels overwhelming and we're going to sink. Like we're not going to make it out. And often that's why it feels so scary to allow the emotion, because it feels like it's going to consume you. And it won't, but we've just built it up. We've built up so much emotion. We've tried to stuff it down for so long that it just feels overwhelming. It feels so big and scary. And so we keep fighting, we keep resisting. But it's that resistance, it's the fighting that actually makes the emotion big and unmanageable. When we just sit with it, and feel it, and we allow it, it becomes much easier to move through. So when we allow ourselves to cry, when we allow ourselves and our bodies, sometimes my body will shake a little bit. Often that's more when my nervous system is activated, but it's let your body get the cortisol out. Let the emotions flow through you. Notice where it is in your body. Where do you feel the emotions in your body? What does it feel like? This is how we start to process through them. And it's by allowing them as long as they take and just being there for ourselves that allows it to go so, so much faster. But the waves are going to still come. They're going to come for weeks, sometimes months. They're going to come in, but they're going to come. It's like as they come in and as time goes on by allowing them, it's you're moving backwards closer to the shore. And so now you get to the point where the waves come up to your knees, but your feet are in the water. Now it's only your ankles. And then it gets to where it comes up to your shins, and the waves will come up to your ankles then, but you move back and now your feet aren't in the water at all. But the waves still come up. And then there's going to be times where it feels like it starts to move down. So it's, you've gone from like the waves up around your neck to the waves down around your waist. And then maybe there's a day where the waves come back up again around your chest or your shoulders. And it's not making that wrong. Nothing has gone wrong. Again, this is not linear. This is not, never will I ever feel something again. This is, it's learning how to shift, how to allow the pain and allow the agony and the heartache and the sorrow now, and starting to shift from that pain and sorrow into gratitude and love. And I'm so grateful for the time that I had to spend with different people. I'm so grateful for what I learned in this experience. I'm so grateful for how I am changing and who I am becoming. It's like I shift into this. I'm grateful for the time I had with this person. I'm grateful that I had this one in my life. Like my grandmother, she passed in 2007. And there are still times where I get sad and I think about her and I wish she was here and I wish I could call her on the phone. And so instead of calling her, I call my grandpa because he is still alive and I can have a conversation with him. And so sometimes it's that bit of sadness and grief and loss that reminds me to call the people that I have in my life and to love them. And it'll come at different times and different ways, and it's just something that will come in and then it goes out, and it comes in and then it goes out. And so when we look at this, not as a, I have to hurry up and get there, but when we look at it from a place of learning more of how to allow the emotions to not turn to anything else. Now it's like learning how to even, I struggle with saying the word enjoy the process because nobody is going to enjoy grief. We are never going to enjoy it, but it's learning to create a more neutral experience with something like the grief and the loss, and really digging into trusting that God has something more in store for you, for your life, that you are learning something through this grief, through this process. You get to dig in deeper to that conviction of, this is not going to hold me down or keep me back. Like, I'm going to do big, amazing, wonderful things because I have been through this, because I am going through the fire and being refined. This is going to make me stronger. This is going to make me better. I look at my last two divorces and I'm like, this is setting me up to be a really kick-ass third wife for someone. I'm going to create an amazing third marriage. That's my goal. That's my desire. And part of it is letting go of the boyfriends and the dating relationships and the toxic relationships, or even just the dysfunctional relationships that come my way. Learning why I'm attracted to that, why I tend to go for that. So anyways, more on that next week. But when we think about grief is going to be waves, and there is sometimes the waves are going to be bigger, sometimes they're going to be smaller. It's all just about allowing it. Because the more you allow it, the easier it gets, I promise. It's really the fighting and resisting that makes it feel like you won't survive. And that's not what we want. And that's how a lot of people experience it. That's why it feels so hard and scary and overwhelming. Because it's become this huge thing that you can't bear. You can't bear the thought of allowing it. It's just so big. But we don't need to fear our emotions. It's just vibrations in the body. The more you allow them, the smaller they become, the more quickly you move through them. So I know it sounds counterintuitive sometimes, but that's how it works. These are just some of my initial thoughts and 46 minutes of initial thoughts on grief. This is why there are multiple podcast episodes on this. That was one of the things I was like, at first it was one podcast. And then as I started writing and talking, I was like, oh yeah, there's going to be at least two. And then I was like, yeah, there might be more like three. So this is part one around grief. And it may not just apply to grief. It could be other heavy emotions, intense loneliness, might be intense anger. There's any number of things, but this is the starting point. So the next episode, I'm going to share a little bit more of my experiences with grief over the last 2 years and what that's looked like, how I've worked through it, because I feel like I am a master now. I know how to do this, and I'm still learning more of my habits and patterns, and I'm still catching things, but I have gotten and I've become really aware and really attuned with what it is that, like, I'm looking for with how I want to show up, especially with relationships, because that's where the bulk of my grief has come the last couple years. So I'm going to walk you through that. And then there will be a third episode where I'm sure there's going to be some bits that I forgot to say or points that I wanted to make that I forgot in this episode. So that'll probably come in episode 3 as well. But also now walking you through again a little bit more of that process of how do we move into a place of acceptance? How do we move into a place where we can allow it? What does that even look like to allow emotions? And how do we know and recognize when we're fighting, when we're resisting, when we're buffering? So if this is something that you want help with, whether you have gone through a big loss or any form of grief recently or not, this is one of the key things that I do with people is help to create emotional safety for them and to help understand the patterns and habits that have them creating patterns that they don't want, unwanted results, and to start showing up and changing how they create new ones. And that's always going to start with yourself. It always starts by looking inward and looking at, okay, how did I create this? Now, how do I want to change? How can I show up differently? Not putting requirements or needs on anyone else, but looking internally first. How am I attracted to this? Why am I attracting and bringing this type of person in? That's what we want to work on. And so if that's the type of work that you want to do and you want to heal your relationship with other people, if you want to heal your relationship with food, with your body, with alcohol, those are all things that I help people with. And I would love to help you too. So the next best step is to schedule a free consultation. And we'll talk more about what's going on right now, especially as we go into the holidays, where it's said to be the most wonderful time of the year. And we're not always in cheerful, happy, wonderful spirits. We're not always in a place where we want to celebrate, be merry. We don't always want to eat, drink, and be merry. And nothing has gone wrong. So if this is something that you want help navigating now and into next year so that you can create a life so good it blows your mind, then let's chat. Visit www.bodyyoucrave.com/schedule and you'll find my calendar there. So pick a day and time that works for you and we'll just explore where are you now and where is it that you want to be? Where is it that you're struggling to make peace and find acceptance right now? And I'll show you how to bridge that gap, how to make peace, how to find the acceptance, and then to very intentionally and strategically craft a plan to move forward and create the life and body you crave. You ready? Let's go. I wanna be there on the stage with you. You and I could be the next rage to hear the crowd roar. Make them want more. Kick the footlights out. I wanna